Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Thursday, June 18, 2020. We have a very special program for you here today, all about what's happening in Warner Park here in Nashville. Before we get started, and for the sake of our new listeners, we encourage you to follow us on Facebook so that you will have notice of new programs. Our Facebook page is called The Mark Fraley Podcast. Also, you may subscribe to the program on iTunes and on many other podcast services. Now approaching their 100th anniversary in 2027, the Warner Parks are truly one of the most outstanding things about Nashville. From the standpoint of acreage, it is among the largest parks operated by any municipal government anywhere in America. From the standpoint of diversity of recreational offerings, there is nothing to compare to it. Today we sat down with Jenny Hannon, Executive Director of the Friends of Warner Parks. This is a not-for-profit corporation which works in conjunction with the Metropolitan Board of Parks and Recreation to maintain and improve the parks and the visitors' experiences. About two-thirds of the 3,200-acre Warner Parks consists of forested hills and valleys with mixed hardwoods prevailing. Over the years, exotic vegetation has degraded the forest environment in a significant way. I was pleased to learn of the efforts being made to eradicate the invasive exotic plants in advance of their 100th anniversary. They are calling the project Invasive Free WP, with the goal of being invasive-free by 2027. This is part of a larger $15 million capital campaign aimed at restoring the park to its full glory. Exciting times for sure. And so I hope you will enjoy my interview with Jenny Hannon. Jenny Hannon, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you. Good morning. Happy to be here.
Jenny, it's a beautiful Thursday morning here in Nashville, and I can see that you're coming to us from your office there at Warner Park.
That is correct. Every day is a good day in the park.
What a terrific view you must have of the bluebirds out the window and all that sort of thing.
It is, and it just depends on the season. Either they're bluebirds or they're cardinals or lots of wildlife. It's fun.
Jenny, I want to spend the majority of the time today talking about what's going on at Warner Park, and it's a lot of things going on, I know. But as we get started, it's traditional in this program for my guests to talk a little bit about themselves, and this program tends to focus on conservation and parks and the natural environment, historic preservation, those sorts of topics. And you found yourself right in the midst of it. Anything in your background that kind of inspired you to be involved in this sort of a field?
You know, I'm not sure I intended to end up in conservation, but I'm really happy to be here now. I think it probably started when I was a little girl. I went to summer camp, like most people, in Nashville, Indiana, and spent a lot of time outside and learned a lot about the trees and the wildlife. And then upon coming to Nashville, sort of stumbled into a great relationship with Nashville Parks.
You at one time served on the Board of Parks Commissioners, is that correct? Or
I did. I, for 12 years, from 94 to 2006, was fortunate enough to serve Nashville as a member of the Metropolitan Parks and Recreation Board. And I'll have to give thanks to Jim Fike. When I started at the Sports Council, as many of you know, Jim, the longtime park director for Metro Parks, and then 7 years at State Parks, And he, when we started the sports council, we didn't have any really facilities except parks to hold our events. And he did everything he could to help us to be able to hold events in Nashville at our various parks. And that relationship morphed into me serving on the board and him being really my mentor and here in Nashville.
You know, the board in the Nashville Parks and Recreation Department is an exemplary organization. There are different kinds of park boards in Tennessee. Some are advisory only, and some are actually in charge. The Metro Park Board is actually runs the show, and it's quite an organization with a great history.
It is. The Park Board has been, I think they're the Park Board and the Metro Parks Department, I think are one of the top departments in our Metro government from all across the board, from the management and the execution. And it was, you know, it was a real honor for me to serve on the board and to watch the board continue to serve in that manner. Is we work very obviously very closely with the park board and the parks department. They own the park, and
right,
we are here to partner with them.
So how long has the Friends organization existed?
So we are just started our 31st year at the Friends of Warner Parks. And you probably remember that it was modeled after the Central Park Conservancy, which was really the first organization in the states set up to partner with a municipality park. And we had a group of folks who started with Claire Armistead and Peggy Joyce and Warner Bass, and they said we need to do the same thing here. And so our Friends of Warner Park is modeled after the New York, the Central Park Conservancy.
Central Park Conservancy, which is credited with the major revitalization of the beautiful Central Park. I remember visiting there in the early 1980s, and Central Park was really a dump. It was a shame, really, but it was a dump at that time. And the Park Conservancy started putting on concerts there in the green. I can remember the Simon and Garfunkel concert and those sorts of things to raise money to renovate the parks.
It's a great story. There's a wonderful book out called Saving Central Park, and it's a memoir really of Elizabeth, I'm losing her last name, that was the first director and president for a long time of the Central Park Conservancy. And
right,
for anybody who's interested in park, private public partnerships, park conservation, landscape architect, it's a fabulous book.
Fantastic. Well, you found yourself involved with the Friends of Warner Parks, and for my listeners that are not from Nashville, and we do have some out-of-state listeners, talk about what the Warner Parks are.
So Warner Parks are a gift to Nashville. They are truly our sanctuary in the city. So Warner Parks is a 3,200-acre natural area, and it has our steeplechase, the Allee that was built by Brian Fleming. It has acres and acres of green space, and we have 22 park shelters. We have 10 cemeteries in the park. The Little Harpeth River runs through the park. We have a sports field, and we have 60 miles of trails, both primitive and road trails and horse trails.
And equestrian trails, right.
There's a little bit for everybody.
Fantastic. And I know portions of the park are actually listed on the National Register of Historic Places.
That is correct.
Right.
Yes, we have a number of spots.
You know, the park, as I've read, began in around 1927 or so, and has been expanded a couple times since then. And major park facilities constructed by the Work Project Administration.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. The history of this park is so fascinating. And you're correct, in 1927, Luke Lee gave the park the original 868 acres to the city. He was married to Percy Warner, and Percy Warner died shortly after he and Percy's daughter Percy were married, and he asked the Parks Department or the Park Board to name the park after Percy Warner. So Luke Lee actually gave the original 868 acres.
Right.
And since then it's just grown. It was all of the stone walls, the steeplechase, the Allee at the Belmead entrance were all built by the WPA in the mid 30s.
Right.
So there's a lot of history in our park. And an interesting fact we like to tell is the steeplechase that's here, that's a beautiful horse race, a racing track, is the only racetrack built by the federal government in the United States.
That's a fantastic story. And
Yeah.
they continue to have races there each year.
Every year. I also forgot to mention we have two golf courses in the park, an 18-hole golf course and a 9-hole golf course. So
Right.
it's just endless opportunities for recreation.
So you have a lot going on right now at the park, and I know having driven past the Belmead entrance recently that you have a major project going on with the renovation of what's referred to as the Allee, which is the grand entrance to the park at the end of Belmead Boulevard. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Sure. So in 2017, a group of folks who were on the board and involved with the park decided they wanted to renovate the original stone gates to Percy Warner Park. And that was really the initiative to continue the improvement of the park. And so in 2018, those were completed. And they all agreed at that time that the next project would be the Allee steps. We refer to them as the Allee, but it's a cascade of steps at that entrance. And so plans started, and we started in January on a $3 million project to restore the steps that were finished in 1936. They not only the steps were a priority, but the surrounding woodland restoration. And so the steps are getting restored and renovated, and then 30 acres around the steps, we have done a lot of invasive plant removal, and that's all part of the project. And one of the largest parts of the project that you won't see, but you'll have to appreciate, is the stormwater management at the top of the steps. The reason the steps have eroded over the years is because when it rains, they've really become a waterfall. And so we've completely re-engineered the top of the steps
Okay.
so it goes through to keep at least 70% of the water that was cascading down the steps from the steps. So there's an elaborate engineering process that has happened, and we will all keep our fingers crossed for that when that first rain that it works as we intend, and I have no doubt that it will, and we'll be able to preserve the steps for the next 100 years.
Well, it's a challenging site because they're, from the gate, the stone gate, as you referred to it, up to the top of the Allee is a change of grade of perhaps a couple hundred feet, I would say.
At least, yes.
Yeah.
And when we were designing the project, we hired a firm out of Ohio, the Tradesmen's Group, and they work on historic restoration stone projects all over the country. They're working on one at Fort Knox. They did Iwo Jima. They were the ones who did the original stone gates. And they, one of our first meetings, they said one of the issues really with the steps in today's world is that the steps were built originally for parasols and hoop skirts, and now they are used more with Lululemon and tennis shoes. It is a big workout place.
Sure, it's become an assembly point for people starting their Saturday and Sunday morning workouts, whether it be jogging or bike riding or walking or whatever they're doing there at Warner Park. It's really the focal point for everybody's Saturday morning workout.
It is, and it's a great place to meet.
Now the steps themselves are they're sandstone.
They are sandstone steps, they're flagstone, there's some bluestone,
Okay.
and all of those elements are we're putting back into the back in the steps. So many people, when we first said we were going to do this, they said, you know, are you using all new stone on the steps? Are you taking all the old?
Oh, no,
not at all. So 85% of the original stone has been used.
Okay.
And then we have introduced some flagstone in between the steps, some bluestone, which was originally over by the World War I Memorial. I will say on our website for your listeners at warnerparks.org, we have a little blog section called LA Questions Answered. And Bob Parrish, who was superintendent of Warner Parks for over 30 years, works with Friends of Warner Parks. And he's written a great blog about different choices we made and why we chose different stone here and there, and about the landscaping and things that you will see once the park is open, once the steps are reopened.
So Jenny, I know that that when you came on board, you were seeking input from various folks, and you were interested in hearing what the challenges were at the park. And I know Bob was one of those people that you consulted with. You mentioned earlier about the removal of invasive exotic plants in the LA project. Did that come up as a major point of interest?
It is, very much so. The removal of the invasive plants, it is. When I've been in this job almost a year, and I started asking the questions, you know, what is the biggest issue in the park, or the problem, or where, and every time it was our biggest natural resource management issue are invasive plants. And now with the Emerald Ash Borer phenomenon happening, it is becomes an even greater issue for the park.
Well, tell us more. Many of the people that listen to this program regularly will know that that's a special interest of mine. But for those that may not be aware of what we're talking about when we speak of the invasive exotic plants, what are we talking about, particularly there in Warner Park? What are the ones that are the issue there?
So we have four really invasives. That there are many others, but the four largest are the Japanese honeysuckle, the Chinese privet, euonymus vines that are crawling on the trees, and tree of heaven are really the four. Or ailantus is the so those are the four exotics that we focus on the most, and we feel are the biggest issue in the park.
And from my own observation, it is a major issue. Has there been any technical survey done of the degree to which the park has been degraded by the presence of these?
Yes and no. So we are very fortunate. We're fortunate on a lot of fronts, but Steve Manning, who runs an organization called IPC, Invasive Plant Control, Steve was actually one of the first interns at Friends of Warner Parks, along with his partner Lee, and they realized 30 years ago that this was going to be an issue not only here in Nashville in our park, but all over the country. So they started a company, and they are really one of the foremost experts in invasive plant removal. And their office is here in our park, actually over on our hill of forest. So we have partnered with them for the past 7 years to address the areas. And Steve has a very detailed map of where it needs, what needs to happen. You know, it's really a money and manpower issue, which many problems are.
Right.
And with this capital campaign, we have made it a priority. So we have some funds available to be able to address the problem.
It's a major undertaking.
It is a major undertaking. And I used to enjoy the park a lot more before I had this job. Now everywhere I look, I see an invasive plant. I actually carry a backpack with a small chainsaw in it pretty much every time I hike to take care of the euonymus vines on the trees. I will say that we have, you asked specifically about the park, so we estimate we have 3,200 acres
right
in the park. We estimate we have about 2,100 of those that need invasive plant removal and management, and that's a big number. And, you know, the places that don't are the sports fields and the steeplechase and
Say those numbers again.
So we have 3,200 acres in the park.
Right.
And we estimate we have about 2,100 acres that need invasive plant management.
A full two-thirds of the park.
It doesn't necessarily mean that there are invasive plants in all of those 2,100 acres.
Right.
But they are, there are enough places that, that need it. And, you know, over the years at Friends, we've been able to eradicate about 20 acres a year. And, but then that needs management because they like to come back.
Right.
And so when we started this project this year, we made the decision that if we were going to invest the money, we were going to continue the management of them. And so we hired Invasive Plant Control, and they've done the 30 acres around the steps, around the 1.6 mile loop at the park. And they did a cut and treat process where they cut and treated immediately.
Right.
And so, you know, we're hoping that that will keep them out of there. They will still need some management there. And then in other areas of the park, we had a partnership with Thompson Machinery here, and they were generous enough to let us borrow two skid steers with a forestry mulcher type of machine, and we could cover a lot more ground. But, you know, those we're having to go back and treat now.
Right.
So from October until about March when we stopped, we had eradicated about 165 acres.
Wow.
So we're very proud of that initial impact. And we, again, now are coming back this spring and having to treat a lot of that, those areas that, that we did.
You know, Jenny, for the casual user of the park, the visual impact of removing the invasives is a big time impact. Just to look at the forest, the difference in the forest.
It's so interesting that, that you say that, and you're exactly right. So, again, I'm new, a little naive at my job, and I was so excited about the steps being restored and renovated, and I still am excited about that, and I thought that would be the thing that people would get so excited about. But the clearing around the steps, the whole 1.6 mile loop, has been the thing that people always comment about. It's been the thing that is most noticeable because it is such a drastic difference between what the park should look like and what the park actually looks like.
Say more.
So, it, well, so we actually, you can see the forest floor. You can see the, in between the trees, you can see the deer, you can see the turkeys, the birds. And, but yet at the same time, a lot of our native things are now being able to grow and to come back. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what does come back.
You're going to see next spring ephemeral wildflowers on that hillside that haven't been viewed in 50 years.
We will. We had a, you know, the IPC cut and treated and then dropped a lot of the plants. And we had hours and hours and hours of volunteers dragging it out of the forest floor. And then we chipped it all away. And I think the process of volunteers seeing the difference, the people walking in the park seeing the difference. And Mark, you'll remember, I mean, I've been in Nashville almost 30 years, but I cannot tell you how many native Nashvillians say to me, you know, the park doesn't look like it used to. We've got to return the park to its original state, and which really means the removal of invasive plants.
Jenny, I have to tell you a story. I had a friend who several years ago ran for mayor, did not become mayor, but was a candidate for mayor. And we were good friends, and I started chatting him up about invasive exotics and what we needed to do. And this was 15 or 20 years ago. And he did not really understand what I was talking about. So I took him on a drive through Green Hills neighborhood and pointed out to him the mimosa trees, the privet hedge on surrounding people's yards, the honeysuckle bushes that were the buffer between each yard. And then I took him out to Warner Park and we took a hike. And he complained to me for years after that I had ruined his experience of the park because he had hiked in that park for many years and had not known that those things should not be there.
Yes, that it is so true. You know, you can't unsee your eye anymore. And much like you with your friend, I have a friend and somebody who's very interested in the park. Right when I started saying, Jenny, I want you to come hike with me in this park. And I went and we hiked. And he said, see all that stuff around the tree? That should not be there. And you see all that? And I never noticed before. I was just a casual hiker in the park. Well, now I can't be a casual hiker in the park anymore because all I see is all the invasive plants. But we hike about every 2 weeks and we talk about, what's next and how it he grew up in this park and he knows what the park could be and should be. And it's
Dynamite.
disappointing that we've let it get to this place. But again, I think it's a money and then manpower
So
issue.
you have a specific goal in mind with respect to the removal of these exotics.
So we are the Warner Parks will be 100 years old in 2027. As you mentioned, it was in 1927, Luke Lee gave the property to the city. And so I really feel like we have a real opportunity here to be invasive free WP by 2027. And that's our goal. And we're going to need lots of volunteers, we need lots of money, lots of manpower. And but I really I think are going to be able to make a big difference in the next 7 years. And if we started, Mark, in 2025 and said, oh, all of a sudden we have 2 years to, get our park healthy, and we wouldn't be able to get it done.
Correct.
If we have 7 years and we have great partnerships and we have very generous people in Nashville who I truly believe want to see the park return to its original state.
Dynamite. Now, I know that the park has, within the last few years, added a component referred to as the Birch Area. Across Highway 100 from the traditional Warner Park. Is that going to be part of that process as well?
It is. So we added two pieces, the Birch Reserve and the Hill Forest. The Hill Forest is off Highway 70 in Nashville, and it's not a public spot. We have tours through the Nature Center in the late fall and early spring. Don't want to go there in the summer, but it's an original growth forest. And that area really is invasive free. And so the Birch Reserve, we also, and it is adjacent to the Birch Reserve. So the two of them we hope to keep as pristine as possible. Sadly, in just a short time, the Birch Reserve has seen some invasive plant growth.
Yes, last time I was there was significant honeysuckle around.
So we need to work on that. And actually that would be a fairly contained area that we could focus on that would, I think, make a big difference, a major impact immediately.
So Jenny, for our listeners that want to be involved, what's the way for them to contact you to make donations to and to otherwise learn about what's going on?
So we actually launched a capital campaign a year ago called It's My Nature Capital Campaign, and our goal is to raise $15 million for numerous projects in the park. And really, it all goes back to visitor experience for people in the park, for conservation, for our carbon footprint, for the global conservation effort. And so the $15 million will be spent on, well, the original gifts have been spent on doing the LA and the invasive plant removal around the park, woodland restoration. And our plan is to do a great deal of woodland restoration. We have a lot of stone walls that need to be repaired in the park, the trail maintenance. We have an incredible Nature Center campus that needs some improvements. We're going to work on that. And so it is a multifaceted campaign to improve the park. And so we are running that out of the Friends of Warner Parks office. Also information on that on our website at warnerparks.org. And certainly make a donation. I have been giving many tours at the LA. I'm happy to take anybody over to the steps and show them what we're doing there. And we have been talking a lot about our plans for the next 7 years, again, all leading to the 100th anniversary of Warner Parks in 2027.
Is there a special celebration planned in it for the 100th year?
There will be.
Okay, that is not quite.
And hopefully in this world, and hopefully in 2027, we won't have to social distance to have that celebration.
Yes, let's hope for that. Absolutely.
No, Mark, I did want to mention also, It is, we're really fighting a battle on two fronts because of the invasive plant problem that we have in the park. We are also just experiencing for the first time the emerald ash borer insect that is going to be attacking our park. And we estimate that 10 to 15% of our canopy, over 6,000 trees, we will lose. And so when you lose trees, it opens up the canopy, it opens up the sunlight. The first thing that gets there and grows are the invasive plants.
Right.
And so we are having to, really make an effort prior to the ash borer, prior to the trees going away, to eradicate these invasives so that we let our native plants grow in the open sunlight when the ash trees all die.
I have noticed around the park that there are some signs up to interpret to the visitors about what you're doing as far as the emerald ash borer.
Mm-hmm. So the Metro Parks Department commissioned a survey to study what trees are in the park and what could be dangerous to hikers, visitors to the park, the parking lots. And so they've identified a number of those trees. And it's from that survey that we feel very, very confident that we have over 6,000 trees. And again, 10 to 15% of our canopy, that will be.
Goodness.
Tested. Yeah.
Would there be any point in, I don't know if you've consulted foresters about reintroducing other types of other species to replace the ash trees?
Yes, we will definitely have a reforesting plan.
Okay.
I don't know what that is right now, but we are assembling a group this summer to look at the overall plan, not just to reforest, but where to reforest and what kind of trees should we be reforesting. And when we get rid of these exotics, what should go there? Should it be woodland? Should it be meadows? What kind of woodland restoration should take place here? So that is going to be a big initiative over the next year. And, we're going to welcome a lot of input to that plan.
Well, you mentioned the meadows, and there are several very pretty little meadows throughout that park that have been in the last 20 years been permitted to grow native grasses. And you certainly see the bobwhite quail and some of those species that depend on those ecosystems.
Yeah, that's been an interesting new introduction really into the park with those meadows. And again, with every positive, there are a lot of people who used to play sports in those meadows or used to, do other things. And they think, well, should it be a meadow or should it be a mowed field or exactly what should it be? So that's what this plan is really intended to identify. Where can we have more meadows or where should it be mowed or that sort of thing.
Jenny, I have to relay this story to you. Of course, Bob Parrish and I have been friends for more than 30 years.
You're the luckiest man then because he's the greatest.
Well, he's a terrific resource and extraordinarily knowledgeable. And when he became involved with that park early on, the maintenance crews had what I refer to as chronic mowing syndrome. And all those places that have been permitted now to grow up into tall grass and meadow were uniformly cut with a bush hog 5 or 6 times all throughout the summer. And of course, stifling the possibility of ground feeding birds and those sort of ground nesting birds and other kinds of experiences like that from happening. Man, it was a struggle to get those guys to park the bush hogs.
Well, that is true. And, sadly, as our metro government is a cyclical, government in Nashville right now, we're having some serious financial woes.
Right.
And all the departments are feeling it. And I would say our parks maintenance department is feeling it tremendously. So we have a terrific crew of maintenance guys who are here at Warner Parks, but they now service the regional parks, but they used to only service just Warner Parks. And they're down three guys and
Man,
have
oh man.
a year and a half. And so they are asked to do so many things and they're stretched so thin. So just as a matter of staffing, et cetera, some of those fields have gone just because there hasn't been the ability to mow it. So I'm hoping that the parks maintenance will become a priority of our government again, and we can help these guys out who work really hard every day.
Fantastic. Well, Jenny, I want to thank you so much for spending your time with us today and giving us some insight into what's going on at Warner Park. I certainly encourage my listeners to check out your website and get involved.
Well, we would welcome from a volunteer perspective, a financial perspective. We have a new membership program. It is, as I said, I don't know if I said it earlier, but I truly have the best job in Nashville. And I am, grateful to the team of folks who work at Friends and everybody loves Warner Parks. That's our favorite line.
Well, Jenny, thank you again for joining us, and we'll check in with you from time to time and keep ourselves updated on what's going on.
Great, Mark. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it and enjoy this glorious day in Nashville.
Thanks, Jenny.